Toys with Jamie and Chris, and if I'm introducing an episode, I probably had the idea for it. This week, we're going to be talking about a concept that I came across recently called Byplay, but we might also talk about it as sort of like bits or sub-games, and we're going to do a little bit of a workshop trying to figure out what is the balance between playing a scene and sort of the byplay of a scene. And so I'll try to provide a little bit of context. There's a book called Moby Dick that I've been reading recently, and there's a scene where Ahab is on another ship, and there's like a doctor character and a captain character on this other ship, and Ahab, of course, is trying to find out where Moby Dick is, but the captain and the doctor keep kind of having this side banter. And it gets described in the book as byplay, which is kind of a fun term that I hadn't heard before. We talk a lot about playing in improv, but the idea that byplay, which is sort of something that's going on along the side, sort of like a sub-theme, is something that's actually come up a lot when we do Folly rehearsals with Jamie and I, because we've talked about flourishes of certain bits or how we might lose the specific context of a scene while we dive into some kind of bantery kind of a thing. And we talk a lot about the balance between the two. And I think a lot of people have maybe seen when it's gotten out of balance, when the banter overtakes the scene, or when the scene is just about the scene and there's not really any other fun going on. So that's kind of what I wanted to explore in the workshop today. Do you guys, after sort of explaining it like that, do you have any questions or thoughts on that?
I've been doing improv for, I don't know, like 24 years or something like that. Why have I never heard the term byplay before in theater?
It's old. Or,
huh.
I would say sub-game. Sub-game you've probably heard.
Mm-hmm. Spinning plates. Sometimes spinning game. Plates.
Satellite and, game.
And by is spelled B-Y?
Well, it depends who's writing it. Herman Melville writes it B-Y-E-play. If you Google it, you will find it under byplay, and you'll hear me clacking on the keyboard for a quick second while I just...
I like BYE. Byplay. No more playing. Time to get
serious.
No more
playing. That's right.
So the literal definition would be secondary or subsidiary action or involvement in a play or movie.
Hmm.
So like a subplot, a sub-game.
Sub-game, satellite yes, game. Yes, I think yes. Those are similar ideas.
Yeah, and then secondly, and I'll, of course, Jamie, I want to hear your thoughts. It's funny when I find myself doing a satellite game, finding a subplot, that usually comes up accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause this is a, we want to try to put this on its feet. It's interesting. I'm usually working on one thing and then the byplay, the secondary kind of happens without me working it so much. I don't know if that makes sense. I've never ran a rehearsal or been a part of a rehearsal where someone's like, all right, today we're going to focus on the secondary game of the scene or this, you know, what else is kind of happening off to the side. Those do develop, but sometimes you can even have three, and sometimes things become small runners in a show, right? This little piece that keeps popping up. You keep drinking that glass of water. But it's interesting to kind of like manufacture that. Okay. Those are my thoughts. Jamie, what do you got?
Yeah, I don't know how difficult it'll be in a manufacture. It's more about, I think, being observant, you know. So if the main game is you're a doctor who, you know, gives everybody subscription or prescriptions for Capri Sun, that's the main thing. Then maybe if you say ad hoc instead of ad hoc, then that's a sub game and we start mispronouncing words. Like then it's a, like, you know, it's just the different layers to the scene. And mm-hmm. Oh, Sam, were you going to make a correction?
Well, I'm just thinking about it, and I guess there are different ways that you can play this sort of satellite game or subsidiary thing. And the way that I kind of came across it wasn't so much that you're folding it into the action that's already going on so much as it takes the focus away. So like when you have that primary game, do you ever start to do the satellite game so much that that becomes sort of the main focus of the scene? Have you ever given that note where you're like, hey, like you guys were focused on the spinning plates bit, but like the scene's really about finding out where the whale is. So like, let's get back to that. Like, does that sound like a familiar note?
It does. And I think a moment like that can be exacerbated by the team doing, let's say, a series of tag outs or walk-ons because they're finding that secondary game to be fun or funny and they want to explore that, which is great, but sometimes it can get lopsided where now we're just doing the found bit and we're leaving which today I think I'd be fine with, like in general, like, you know, my more teachery brain would have stopped that in the past. But yes, but I wonder if it's just a two-person scene, which is my specialty. Mm-hmm. I wonder if I would just see that as just kind of switching topics or switching the focus rather than leaving one for the other, just like this is now the thing. Ad hoc. What do you mean ad hoc? It's ad hoc. Oh, where I'm from, you know, where I'm from is this and that. What else happens where you're from? That's a stupid example. But I don't know. I don't know. I hear you, Sam. I'm playing with this in my brain. It does happen a lot. Or Sam, does it happen a lot? Is that sometimes when you recognize you have a second or even a third game, to me that is usually found in more advanced play. And by that I mean not that younger improvisers can't stumble across a second or third game, but they usually aren't, I don't know, deft enough to keep that balance going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like when I've run into trouble with it was especially when, like, I was first learning game. And so, you know, you set up a scene, we have our context, I've maybe started playing some kind of a game, and then we find this other thing that's kind of fun, and I kind of lose the first game, right? I've kind of become focused on this shiny new object, and I kind of have to be focused back onto the first one, if that makes sense. I think it's a trap for, like, intermediate level improvisers, where you're, like, just good enough to know what a game is and how to play it, but you're not good enough to balance a show or balance a scene with it.
To me, it's about the language that we use to talk about game. You know, you hear play the game and then rest the game. When you're resting the game, that's not necessarily an opportunity. That's not a moment where you should just talk about your favorite movie. That's a moment where you could be developing a sub game. Right? You rest the main game and play the sub game. And then while you rest that game, then you go back to the main game. So you're always playing a game, but we talk about resting the game, meaning a moment of no gameplay, as opposed to sub gameplay, which I think maybe the language that we talk about gameplay and resting the game and playing the game might affect how singularly people play game.
I don't know that I agree with that, Jamie. I think resting the game doesn't necessarily need to be a moment where we're talking about something arbitrary like your favorite movie, but we might see you do the inverse of what the game was calling for. If I don't want to eat steak and I don't want to eat steak and I don't want to eat steak, well, eventually, even if I'm heightening, that might run a little lateral. But if I go, okay, I've been convinced, let me give it a shot. They put the plate in front of me. I pick up my fork. And then it moves, then I don't want to eat the steak again. That moment there where I was willing to go for it, to me, is resting the hit of it all, of the no, no, no. Maybe there's a yes. I definitely don't want to do it because it just moved, and then we can edit or get out of there. I don't know. That was a bad example, but please talk to me.
That's a great example. But I think that is one beat of the game, you know, because if that's the whole game, then your scene's over in 35 seconds, right? So that's one beat of the game. Now that you've almost tried the steak, okay, you know what? I can't. Now that's your opportunity to rest the game and play a sub game. And then maybe 2 minutes later, you come back to, God, I'm hungry or whatever. I don't know. And then it pops back up again. That to me is resting the game on like a more macro show level.
Now, Jamie, you've introduced an idea that I hadn't considered coming into this episode, which is the length of the scene itself. And I would say that for some of the teachers I've had, they're okay with a 90-second scene. If there's a strong game, it gets hit hard and we get out of there, right? Like that, a lot of teachers I've had would probably consider that successful. But there's also a mono scene, which is 30 minutes of the same scene, where you pretty much have to have satellite games throwing out. I mean, like basically every character in that mono scene, which kind of brings me back to something, Chris, you were mentioning, is like, is it a two-person problem? I don't know. I think it's maybe more of a three or a four person problem. you know, the scene that inspired this was a three-person scene where two were kind of taking focus from, like, the protagonist of the scene, if that makes sense. So I wonder if this is something that gets introduced a little bit more with group dynamics.
God, these are all other episodes I want to do with this podcast. Because scene length has become a really important part of my last year and a half, 2 years. Where it's not unusual for my players in my workshops to do 7, 8, 9, and 10 minute long two-person scenes. Really not unusual. Mm-hmm. Six is like almost like our short scene.
Yeah.
And Sam, I'm with you. You're right. I recalled the 90-second scene days. And I would say, like, this is just a pretty big generalization, but typically when I'm watching a montage or a Loose Herald at any given theater, scenes are 2 minutes and 30 seconds to 3 minutes tops. That's interesting, Jamie, because the not wanting to eat the steak could be enough if it's a 90-second, if it's a 45-second scene. No, maybe. Moo, no, I'm out. Okay, but you're right. What if there's, and we want our scenes to be, or I want my scenes to be more substantial. Huh. And then furthermore, as we know, I talk about all the time, a lot of the workshop stuff I do is more dramatic, where there isn't necessarily gameplay. Game, by the definition that I'm thinking of, which is UCB's definition, which is the first unusual thing. Or we don't even have to say first. We'll say the unusual thing. You know, we don't do that anymore. So, I mean, listen.
How are you defining game in your play? So it's if you're by the strict UCB definition, then you might not see games in the scenes that you work with your students.
We don't see game.
For me, I define it a little bit more broadly. To me, games are like patterns of interest in a scene. You know, I don't know how to get more specific than that, but like you can have a dramatic pattern of interest is every time someone says, I love you, they close the door. I don't know. It could be something mm-hmm. stupid, but like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more wide than that.
I was kind of fascinated in some of my Shakespeare study stuff when I came across people talking about the game of scenes in Shakespeare, because I was going by like a UCB definition, but there's like the opening of King Lear where the king comes in and says, like, tell me how much you love me. And his three daughters each take a turn standing up saying, I love you more than my husband. I love you more than life itself. I love you as much as I love my father and as I should. I love my husband more. I love my life more. So there's a pattern of activity that is a dramatic game. I mean, it's certainly not played for laughs, but it is. I'd be curious how byplay works in dramatic work, if it's, you know, that sort of comedic undercurrent, if it takes away from the focus of the drama.
Well, that's interesting too, right? Yeah. Also, I love that King Lear example. I really like that. I have a couple things to say, because Jamie, I like your definition of game. It's weird. A long time ago, I locked into the UCB's version because I always said, whether I loved everything I've seen at the UCB or not, they are a game-focused theater. And with that, I will just take their definition as Bible. You know what I mean? Like, it was just easy for me to not overthink that. Granted, I would overthink what the game is of any scene constantly and still do. But the definition was easy for me. I remember when Heyday was being put together, a handful of us had gone through UCB and some of us had not. And those who hadn't were also very talented and experienced players. So this kind of became like a bottleneck here of information, where our coach Karen Gracci says, you know, what was the game of that scene? And I want to be like, strictly, what was unusual? And Amanda Blake Davis might not see it that way because she didn't train that way. But then when we pulled back, Jamie, it tend to be the same thing. Meaning I wasn't going after something she wasn't and vice versa. I just had a you know, she was like, what's an interesting, like you said, a pattern of interest here. And I was like, what's unusual? I know I'm getting kind of convoluted here, but it was interesting to see, to see like really successful players play game without calling it game necessarily, and more specifically without using my specific definition. Mm-hmm. And if I can, one more thing, Sam, with the byplay in the dramatic thing, I think there are moments of this, right? I don't love you anymore. Whoa. And then going off on these little on these little things could either be the reasons why, which might serve them, which might serve this initial quote unquote game of why I don't love you. But there could be a personal kind of tangent unto yourself that not only do I not love you, I'm recognizing right now I don't love myself. But still coming back. But that doesn't mean I'm letting you in. I don't love you for this reason and this reason. But why would I even begin to love somebody who is treating me so poorly? Back to self, you know, introspection, reflection. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Sorry, I went nuts there.
No, I love that. It made me think of a time in class where, you know, the teacher says, don't talk about the thing you're doing.
Yeah.
Like you're working on an assembly line and we say, don't talk about the thing we're doing. Talk about anything else. And I had a scene partner who was like, I love that new show 9-1-1. And we're working on the assembly line and it's, you know, oh yeah, it's great. It's got a lot of action. It's cops. They're responding to emergencies. Hey, will you pass me that nut? Sure. Here you go. Right. And so if the assembly line overtakes that, we would probably say that scene got out of balance in some way.
That's a great example. I think that's actually a really great way to show that, actually, because I was worried about how we're going to put this on its feet. Those are my favorite scenes. My favorite scenes are when the two people aren't talking about the thing they're doing. But I guess when once you reference that and you're on the assembly line, and that's kind of funny, the deeper you two go into the conversation about the actor's choices in this show and the directing and the writing, but also the belt is picking up speed and you keep trying to put that nut on that thing and that's happening simultaneously. That's a really fun, that's two games right there popping off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh. By play.
Yeah. I mean, it's a term that I responded to because we talk so much about play. And it was kind of interesting to kind of give it this other half that like, yeah, we're going to play the scene, but we're also going to play something else in the scene.
Yeah. It's interesting when it comes to folly specifically, because I know you guys have done work like that successfully, but because we're so not into the rules, I mean, you guys can't abandon something for something else, like, but not in a negative way, but it might not fall into this definition because Sam, if we abandon one topic for the other, one action for the other, are we still satisfying that definition or have we just moved on? And then,
yeah. I think that's a great question. I don't have the answer for that. Does the byplay then become the main game kind of a thing? It's interesting.
And Jamie, back to the assembly line. We're talking about a TV show while doing our job. The majority of the scene is about how we feel about the TV show. The secondary is still trying to do a good job. There could be a third, right? My wife keeps calling. Just every now and then I look at the phone. I'm asking you specifically do I blow everything up if I answer the phone and step away? You know what I mean? If I make that shift to like, now this is the scene. Or do you see, I don't know, positives, I guess, in both examples? Because then I'm sure you guys could add a fourth and a fifth. The boss over the intercom, you know, talking or something. So now we have all these things. That sounds kind of fun. I don't know. I'm just, well, Jamie, what are your thoughts on like the importance of the rest? I don't know. That's a weird question.
I'm a huge fan of like improv, taking notes from other art forms. So I think of it kind of like interior design in a sense. Like if you have a beautiful wallpapered wall and that's all you have, that's the game of the scene. That's the game of the room. But then if you add a chair to the corner and a light and then a plant, and now you're adding all these elements and you add depth and richness to the space, I think scenes need that as well. So go answer the phone call and then see where that takes you. And then maybe that's another sub game and the conversation keeps getting more and more personal. And she's talking about she's talking about French fries for dinner later. And then I don't know. And then now you come back to the assembly line and now you're building on that. And maybe one game starts informing the other games, but it all works together to add a rich depth of a scene that I think in improv, maybe because scenes are so quick and, you know, the average tempo, the expected tempo of a scene is like 90 seconds to 2 minutes. We don't allow for the depth and potential of live performance because it's all just hollow and shallow and get in and get out. But that makes for a very hollow show. And for me, I feel very unsatisfied. If I just see one game per scene or one topic per scene, it just feels very shallow and not really real, to be honest.
It's so, not real. Yeah. That's right. Even during this podcast right now, this recording right now, I have my dog at my feet who keeps kind of moving. I'm aware of him and I'm aware that he's like, I don't want him to get up. Also, my AC is going and occasionally it squeaks and I don't want that to ruin this recording. So I have my dog and my AC I'm dealing with. And all that to say, though not very interesting, that is real life. It's not me and just the recording, right, Jamie? Like that's where like the richness and like the texture comes from. Although when I think about texture in a scene, I think about, I don't know, kind of world building or even scene painting. I don't necessarily incorporate that into the scene itself. So I'm not going to start talking to my dog. I guess I could. Or I'm not going to go change. I'm not going to go fuck with the AC because we're recording. I don't know. Cool.
But you struggling to keep that all going is the scene.
That's true.
You know, that it could be the game is you're trying to have a podcast. You're trying to host a podcast while also trying to keep all the distractions out of the thing. And then, so you have to pet the dog and turn the AC down and grab the WD-40 and then kiss your fiance. And then like, it's like, there's a bunch of different things going on, you know? And so I like that. I like that. It adds movement to a scene. It adds energy to a scene. It adds, you know, I always forget how to pronounce it correctly, but verisimilitude, you know, that quality of like being real and something. It's like, it's not just a scene. Oh, that feels like it's actually real.
Yeah.
I think those are all really important. And we don't get that if you're doing 90 seconds of a scene because nothing can really land, you know? So I'm a fan of longer scenes because I think that's where things can develop and where you get more interesting novel work. Otherwise, everything's just going to be a caricature because you don't have time to develop anything.
Yeah, I mean, in defense of comedy, I think caricature is good. If you're going for hard laughs, you want a cartoon. And I think that's what a lot of the improv training is geared for in a very specific way.
Gosh, hard laugh, Sam?
Have you ever heard hard laugh versus like a soft laugh or smile?
I didn't mean to interrupt your flow here.
It's fine. No, go ahead.
On the surface, the idea of somebody playing more caricature, more cartoony.
He's visually repulsed, everybody.
Yeah, it's almost synonymous with zero laughs for me, you know? Yeah. Like, the less real it is, the less I tend to care, the less I'm going to laugh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
By real, I mean complex. Not real as in something else. The complexity of reality is in a scene, you know, I think that's what I'm trying to say but all the games themselves are simple, right? But it's just bringing like five simple games together makes the scene and the world complex because if one game is the phone call and one game is the speaker and the other one is the thing, all of those are simple surface level games, but you put them all together, it adds depth.
So Jamie, you're talking about playing five or six games in a scene, which I think for a lot of people would be a lot of games to try to keep track of, or even to just establish, frankly, to like hit that same pattern, you know, three times so people recognize it. I do think of you as someone who really loves byplay and does a really good job with it. And one of the examples that we brought up before is in the Dragatha Christie, you know, everyone else is doing a murder mystery and you're taking the paintings off the wall. And my question related to this is, do you ever not like it if someone jumps on your satellite game or if the scene becomes about you taking paintings off the wall? Does that take away from the fun of it for you? Do you actually want more people to join you on that sort of side game? I don't know. What's your reaction to some of those experiences?
That's a super interesting question. I think, you know, the more the merrier if people want to add to the game. I mean, the Dragatha Christie had like a cast of six. So there was plenty of room for, you know, like split screens and two people in the corner having their own conversation about a murder while I'm rearranging the art in the other room. So there's a lot of that makes Byplay a lot easier because I don't have to do anything with them. I'm just in a different space doing a different game, and automatically the audience sees two different games going. So that's super simple. But if we're talking about like a two-person show or a three-person show where everybody's kind of involved in everything, I don't mind if people play, you know, taking the art off the wall game. But the problem is a lot of what I see from improvisers is then they try to dissect and they try to like pull apart because they don't know how to play the game with me. So instead they try to ask me, why am I playing that game? Did you start playing that game when you were a kid? It's like, that's not the way it's supposed to be. And they just like, they start making it a conversation rather than joining in the game. They start talking about the game because they don't know how to join it. Right. So if you're going to join a game, join the game. Don't dissect the game. I think
that's don't talk about it.
Exactly. Exactly. And people have a hard time just jumping in the game and start taking art off the wall as well. Even though, you know, that seems almost like it, that's the easier route to do. You know, if I'm jumping on 1 foot, if you want to join that game, jump on 1 foot. Don't stand there and ask me why my dad made me jump on 1 foot when I was 5. You know?
Why didn't sense?
You? Yeah, why? Who cares?
I think, Jamie, and this is, that was a great example, Sam, because we've talked about that show a few times. To me, I think it works the best in the way it went down, which was pretty simple. Jamie was right. He didn't have to worry. The focus wasn't on him necessarily. And I think it could work even if it was, but there's other action occurring. He gets to just kind of be off to the side doing that, living in his world. I love that. And I love, for my money, bringing less attention to that as possible. He rearranges the order of the art and then jumps right back into the conversation. Well, I disagree. I think we should find the murderer, right? Almost not even referencing what was done. Mm-hmm. And throughout the piece, he can continue to do that. Maybe walk on stage with a new prop and sets that up there. That stuff to me is kind of fun. It certainly would start to lose some of its pop for me if 4 of the cast members turned to the art and also joined him in that. I mean, it would work and it would be a different thing. I just like the cleanness of cleanness, you know what I'm trying to say.
I mean, it's funny even just talking about Dragatha Christie, because there's a little bit of a byplay in the premise, right? The main game is Agatha Christie, but the byplay is this drag concept that's getting thrown into it. And I would imagine a lot of the experience, I did not see the show, so you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but like, you're not drawing attention to the drag fact, right? That's just sort of a thing that's playing along in the background that we get to enjoy while the main is going on. If it became a drag show that also had Agatha Christie, I think it would probably be less successful as a piece.
Yeah, no attention was directly drawn to the drag nature of it, except for when people would slip up with their pronouns, because we all knew each other. So when I am dressed as a woman and someone refers to me as he, then now we have Agatha Christie, we have Dragatha Christie, and now we have the messed up version of Dragatha Christie. You know, so now we have like multiple layers, and every once in a while a pronoun goes askew. Mm-hmm. So, and that was very fun. That added a lot of, you know, and that was super easy to play. So,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm worried because we're going to put, not worried, I'm excited to put this on its feet here, Sam. I think, you know, a lot of my philosophy or something that I really enjoy is, we talked about it in the improvise episode of Mick Napier's book. And I think it works for us here is if you take care of yourself or if you aren't worried about every single thing I'm doing, I think we could have that. So we sit down. I don't even want to spell it out. Actually, I think we should just do one. Let's try one.
Okay.
Cause I was going to like give an example of how it could work in a two-person scene. Why don't we just do it?
So we're doing by play. We're checking if we can add sub games to a main game.
Yeah. And I don't know, Sam, should it be 2-person? Should it be 3-person?
You know, the only example that I had coming into this was basically to do a version of the Moby Dick scene where one character wants something. The other two characters know each other very well. And sort of see how they can derail the one character trying to get something. And when does it become too much? When is it not enough? If that kind of makes sense. But I think the assembly line could kind of work for 2-person. The environment as sort of the third character, I think, works for this idea.
I'm just gonna jump in with Jamie real quick, okay? Jamie, have a seat.
Which chair? There's a big leather chair. And there's like a little stick chair. Look, did your daughter make this?
Why are you describing my chairs to me? Just have a seat, please.
Well, I've never sat down in your office. I'm kind of one of those people who I just like to put it all out.
Let you go.
All right, this week or is it next week? Because this week, you know, I have a lot of work coming up. Next week is a little lighter. It'd be better if you could let me go next week, but like, I don't mind.
We're going to need your stuff packed by end of day. Your numbers aren't where they need to be. We've had this conversation before, and frankly, you're not bringing in the numbers. You know, it's a numbers game here. It's numbers, numbers, numbers. I mean, that's the name of this company. It's numbers, numbers, numbers. And you're not bringing the numbers.
Well, I have to say, I'm not sure which numbers you wanted, because I was bringing in the address numbers. I was bringing in the phone numbers. I was bringing in the dollar numbers. I was bringing in the staff numbers. You know, I'm usually in charge of hiring, which is kind of, I don't know, I guess being let go as the person in charge of hiring. It's like, who's going to replace me? There's no one.
Well, that's the thing. We're going to put you in charge of firing.
Can I sit down?
Yeah, have a seat.
Well, okay. Well,
which scene. I'll call it right there. Was that enough time? Was that
yes,
too short?
Yes. Okay. Yes. No. No. I have thoughts. I thought that you came for my money. You came in too hot, Jamie. Meaning, you were like trying to make one of your things occur, like manufacture a thing. Where I was hoping to kind of like. So see, this is what happens, right? In classic improv, is that when you have an idea of the way you want the scene to go, it doesn't go that way. Okay, I'm going to quit teaching. Because I was thinking kind of assembly line-ish. Like, okay, the idea,
just do it again. I'll come in softer. Come in again softer. Same scene.
Hey, Jamie, have a seat.
Great. Yeah. Mr. Alvarado, thanks for meeting with me.
Of course. Look, you are a valued member of this company.
Thank you. Thank you.
People like you professionally, and they like you personally. Nobody has a bad thing to say about you.
Yeah, I try really hard.
The issue is, you're not overperforming. You know what I mean?
I'm working nights, weekends. What else could I be doing? What else could I be doing here? You know,
that's the thing. I don't want to answer those questions for you, Jamie. Overperforming is the new underperforming. You know what I mean?
So, okay. You want me to work less? Here, I'll leave right now. I'm leaving right now. I'm leaving this office. Right, I'm taking a long lunch. Please keep me. I'm taking a long lunch. You know what? I'm not coming in tomorrow. Oh. I'm not coming in. You know what? I'm going to get my wife pregnant, and we're going to go on a maternity leave. You know, for like
not so 10 fast. Months. We're going to have to give you a raise.
No, I can't. I can't do that. I don't need the extra. In fact, can we cut my pay in half? You know what? Strike my stock options. I don't want those.
No more stock options, Jamie. You're a model employee. Have a good day.
I'll call it there. Just real quick, I almost came in when Jamie said, I'm going to go to lunch with, did someone say lunch? Where are you going? Berkeley's? Grizzlies? Donnie's? Where are you going to get this? You know, how did you guys feel in there as far as creating byplay?
I think it was it's almost like Jamie was too good, like too ready. Like I think this is an example of the secondary idea. I don't know. It's hard for me to explain. Because in my brain, it's a very typical firing. And then there's another little thing occurring. I don't want to forget all these. I want to try one more way in my brain. But this time you fire me, Jamie. Just hear me out. Just go. Let's just go. Who gives a shit?
All right.
Mr. Parkinen, you wanted to see me?
Yeah, you're fired. Get out.
I was thinking about your putt the other day, right?
Hey, hey, you're fired. Get out. Get out. Take your fucking putter and get the hell out.
But it's your putter as well. Your putt is what I can't stop thinking about. How is it that you can sink a ball from that far with that particular iron? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Security.
Security.
Hey.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
Get Mr. Alvarado. Escort him to his vehicle. He's fired. He's no longer along. Take his little lanyard. Take it off of him. Okay. Take it off him.
Yeah. All right.
And get him the hell out of my office. He's fired. He is fired today. He is done.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir. You want to play golf later?
Yeah, Frank, where do you get your cleats? Cleats? Is that what they're called? Golf shoes?
All right, Frank, you're fired. Frank, you are fired. I gave you one job.
None of these are going the way I planned in my brain. Let's talk.
So I had sort of thought about this in a musical sense coming into today. And I am going to apologize for all the listeners for this. But like, da-da-da, 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 bum-bum-bum, bum-bum-bum, da-da-da, da-da-da. As sort of like a balance between two themes, if you will. And I feel like all of these kind of had one theme. I think the game changed each time, but I wouldn't say that the game ever got derailed, that you were both on board with it to the point where you were talking about where the best place to get lunch is, or, you know, how to, you know, you were trying to do the golf thing, Chris, but Jamie didn't join you on that. So it almost didn't become a byplay.
Well, yes. Well, not only did he not join me on that, he was so strict with the firing, I guess, because Jamie doesn't want to do it my way, even though he probably knows what I'm asking for. So strict with the firing that the scene ends. So now to me, it's a battle of things. It's his thing versus my thing. So there's no buy. He wants to fire me. I want to talk about golf. Mm-hmm. Where in the version I saw it, it was a little softer, a little more like yours, Sam. They said, we're going to have to let you go. Oh, really? I love it here. I know. But listen, you know, times are tough. We got to make some stuff. God, your stroke is incredible. Look, we have a good severance package for you, because it's like you really follow through, and we're going to have to take away your company car. No, I understand. I understand. Of course. Why would I have the car here if I don't work here?
You know what? Right, I don't take the golf cart.
Yeah. Right. Right. Hey. Right. And then on the way out. Yeah. I'll see you on the tee off. I don't know golf.
Yeah. See you at the tee.
Listen, I mean, first of all, there's nothing funny or even interesting about that. I was just doing it for like the mechanics of it all, mm-hmm. where there is like a 70-30 split, because it is a sub game, or I don't know if it should be 50-50.
I don't know. To me, and I didn't know what you were going for, so yeah. I wasn't trying to derail anything, but
I know.
Uncharacteristically, but to me, that's not byplay. That's the main game. I'm trying to fire you and you want to talk about golf. You know, that seems like that's actually the main game. The second game would maybe be something like, I don't know. I gotta take this call, or you keep tripping on the rug in my office, or something like that. Like, just kind of totally unrelated to the main framework. I don't even know that a byplay can be introduced within like the first 15 seconds.
Okay. All right. We're going to do a 3-person scene.
I think byplay will be so much easier this way, because then each duo of characters can have their own game, and byplay is much easier and clearer.
You kind of blew my mind with the idea that each duo can have their own byplay. I want to hold on to that. I'm going to say one duo has a byplay in this scene. Okay. We'll just to put a little bit of rails on this. Chris, I love how you used, like the interview game format to try to kick this off. I'm going to try to do something like that too. Jamie and I will be clerks at a store, and Chris, you come into the store to buy something.
Great.
You got to stand on your apron.
I got to wash it later.
What is that?
Ketchup.
Like a big. Oh.
From lunch.
I haven't taken my lunch yet.
Been here 4 hours. You got to take lunch.
you know, I can get out an extra 30 minutes early if I don't take lunch. And I'd rather just have a nice dinner, you know?
I'm pretty sure that's against labor law.
I mean, when you open up a store on the border of Arizona and California, who's to know whose law to follow? I mean, your checkout stand is in California. Mine is in Arizona.
It does make our taxes complicated.
Well, not mine. Mine are super simple.
Well, right,
super simple. Yeah, that's right. But gosh, I mean, that unemployment. Yeah. How do you like paying for that recall election? That's fun.
I just don't like telling people when they come on my side they have to wear a mask. It's really annoying.
I know, but over here it's kind of freedom.
Two lottery tickets, please.
I'm sorry. Whose line are you in? Whose lottery are you in?
Yeah, which state?
Yeah.
Nevada.
Can you believe these people?
I can't believe it. This is clearly the California-Arizona border. I mean, we're literally on a raft in the middle of Lake Havasu. And people, the school system is broken. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. The school system is broken. I mean, California and Arizona. You know how's a good school? I had a stroke there. I'm sorry about that. Do you know who has a good school system? Maryland.
Can I get two lottery tickets, please?
Yeah, which line are you in?
California.
Okay.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I mean, I don't even think they have any money at the lotto. You know what I mean? They're taking all my tax money. They're not doing anything with it.
Arizona.
Is that a question or...
Yeah,
I think he's lost. I don't know. He seems a little out of it.
Sir, are you okay?
No, and that's why I need to buy this. I need my luck to change. I need to have it change ASAP. But the truth is, I got nothing. Okay, my wife left me this morning. She took the dog. The only thing she left me was $2 bills. So I asked God this morning, what do I do? And I got a sign. He says, go buy two lotto tickets and one of them is going to change your life. The only problem is he sent me to Nevada.
This guy heard a voice from God.
California is a godless state.
Am I being refused?
No. All right. Well,
how about one from each?
Okay. Yeah, I've got dollar lotto. Okay. Sure. Here you go, Magic 8.
Arizona doesn't allow you to buy a lotto ticket without buying something of substance first.
Of substance?
Wait, really?
Yeah, you've got to like buy a candy bar, a pack of gum, a mint, something. I can't just sell you a lotto ticket. We have strict.
That sounds like a California law.
No, because it's like related to like, you know, moral puritanism and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
you know?
Right. Turpitude. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Turpentine.
She took my dog.
What kind of dog was it? You don't know?
No.
So a mutt?
Like a mutt, or you just did not know?
Hey. Is it start throwing around slurs now? I don't know how they do it in Arizona. I don't know how they do it in California, but where I'm from, we keep it clean.
Where are you from? Hey,
where are you from?
Goodbye.
Splash. All right.
So
Splash. I like that. See? Yeah. Splash, that was a nice little byplay. Because I referenced that we're on a raft.
I wouldn't call that byplay.
Almost might. Maybe. I don't know.
Chris, I was expecting you to come in a little bit hotter. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. How'd you guys feel about that? Did it get closer? Was it further away?
It's hard to tell because it was a bit of a messy scene. And so it wasn't crisp and clear. I think, I don't know. I almost felt like Chris did have he brought his own game-ish kind of energy to the scene. But at the same time, with like a lot of the state confusion, it kind of played into our main game, which maybe is how it should go. So I don't know.
My issue is I still feel like these are almost too complicated. For instance, you guys are two clerks at a store, and the entire time you're talking about being clerks at a store. where I think it's easier if your clerk's at a store talking about Jurassic Park, the movie, the entire time. And then I introduce the store to you guys as a patron. Like, but I mean, that's, I'm not saying that's by any means, like, I just, in my brain.
Well, let's do that. Let's do that. How about that?
Okay. Jamie, you and Chris, Jamie, you and Chris.
You, okay. You haven't seen Jurassic Park.
I haven't either.
I know the general idea.
Chris, what's your favorite movie?
Stand By Me.
I love Stand By Me with the kid with the glasses.
Okay, cool. You guys have to do that because I've never seen it.
It's not just kid with glasses.
Yeah, it's the kid with the glasses. He gets stung by the bee.
No, that's the one. That's the one. No, that's not Stand By Me.
That's not Stand By Me?
No. That's pretty. No, Brown Eye.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Brown Eye Girl. Yeah.
Do
he dies.
You remember when? Sing with me.
We used to sing. Sha la 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 la.
I thought, are you guys ready to start the podcast? Are you guys ready to start the scene? Or are we going to start a scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I hit the record button like 45 minutes ago.
But then it goes, when the night.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Comedy Fix. My name is Jamie. I'm here with Sam and Chris. We are. You
That's
guys, stop.
Song.
I'm trying to do the intro. Hey.
It's a different movie.
I'm trying to do the intro.
I'm Chris. This is and this is Sam, and we are the Comedy Fix.
Stand By Me.
And today, Jamie, you wanted to talk about what now?
I want to talk about the origins of improvisational tag outs.
Chicago in the 80s, right? They invented tag
no,
outs.
No, I think they were in the
I list. Love Chicago. Saturday in the park, right? Saturday in the park.
No, they weren't
I
in Chicago,
it was
Sam.
The 4th of July.
Sam, they were in like Oregon, Castle Rock.
Saturday.
The four kids.
In the park. I think it was the 4th of July.
Oh, the Goonies.
People talking, people smiling.
Hey, guys, are we doing this podcast or what?
I think we're recording.
Yeah. Sam, go ahead.
Great.
Fine.
So freeze tag comes out of the short form scene, which was big among a lot of...
You're not going to do the intro? You're just going to fucking jump? How do people know what podcast this is?
Jesus.
They click on it.
I'm fine. All right.
Do you guys just shuffle podcasts?
Hey, do you guys want to know? Do you guys want to see a dead body?
I do.
Sam?
I honestly, I'm
going to
say no.
Ooh. I don't know what that was. Man. I felt more satisfying.
Interesting.
How about
Jamie,
this to make
you
it
couldn't
complicated?
Couldn't play it straight. You had to jump on a game.
What?
Couldn't play it straight.
Well, I didn't know I was supposed to. Here, this is my read of the scene. So you guys, you're singing your songs, whatever. I try to start the podcast. You guys kind of ignore me, start the podcast. That's kind of the rhythm. Ignore me, start the podcast, sing a song. Then I don't know if that's by play. If I start playing your game, I drop my game, which is starting the podcast, and play your game, and then you drop the game, and then Chris starts to try to do the podcast, and I'm singing Chicago. Like, I don't...
So I gotta take us back to my original source of inspiration for this, which is one character wants something badly, and they're obstructed because the other two get lost in their own world. And so I think there was a lot of fun in that scene, but I wouldn't say that there was any single character in that scene who was driving towards something specific.
But isn't that what our lottery situation was? I wanted something badly. I wanted to buy lottery tickets. You two were lost in your own world with the semantics of the state stuff. If that's the
yeah.
Right.
Look, this might be me being like a little nitpicky about it.
Sure.
It seemed like we had established ourselves very clearly. So I don't know. I think that's fair though.
Well, also I want to, I guess we don't have that much time, but I want to do it again. I still think there's something to what I had mentioned earlier. I think it needs to be a 70-30 split. I think secondary needs to be like removed a little bit more. It can't be 50-50. It can't, like, now we're on to this, now we're on to that. I wonder what a 70-30 would be like. For instance, in the Clark situation, I don't know, Jamie comes up. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we don't fall into the same trap as the lottery one. But in my mind, Jamie, somehow, first of all, it's funny how, like, how difficult this has become. But, like, in my mind, Jamie, we keep talking about Stand By Me or what movie it is or isn't. You and I have an interaction that is not necessarily funny or anything. It's just like, okay, you want to buy this chocolate milk? I ask you, so we're into this. I go, do you have change? Do you have anything less than 100? I don't have change for it. That's all I have. No, because remember, he was hiding underneath the porch with the pennies. So now I'm back in with Sam, still more 70%. You're only 30%. It's not like I go, like, wait a second, you only have a $100 bill? We don't have this. And Sam goes, we don't have change for that. That would be like 50-50 to me. We completely shift. Like, now it's, the scene is about that. If the scene remains about Sam and I don't know. I don't know. I'm just talking here, guys.
All right. You two are at a place. I'm going to try to come in really hot and really want some important information.
But my, okay, we're going to do that. But I just want to say for the record, that's going to be 50-50 then if you're coming in really hot.
Only if we acknowledge it, though. If Chris, you and I are 70 and Sam's is the 30, then we can keep him in 30. You know,
okay,
we have that power. If we're united.
I'm going to say that the clerks shouldn't be the 70 for this to work. Because okay, then the person coming in wanting something important is a 30, but it has the more stakes, if that makes sense.
All right. Just for workshop-y scenario, I'm willing to... Here's what I'm willing to do for you guys. Uh-huh. I'm willing to do a scene with Jamie and you, Sam, where Jamie and I are going to start the scene off, but we're going to be the 30% and you're going to be the 70%.
Okay.
Is that what you want? Because what you're bringing in is important?
Yeah, let's hypothetically, let's say this is a narrative improv show. Let's say, like, I was a character established in the previous scene, and I'm going to go someplace the next scene. And so you guys are setting up this middle scene. How about that? Is that a way to explain it?
Sure.
Try it. Hey, I'm here for my drug test results.
Okay, I'm already confused. I thought Chris and I were starting something and you were coming in.
Oh, sorry. Go for it.
I've not started anything. That's fine. I'm just already confused.
Okay. Let's handle this. Same thing. Well, I guess it doesn't really matter. Oh, fuck it. Let's go. And we are starting now. I don't know. I mean, I say you tell her you love her. You tell her you love her and just see what she says. Can I get that file, please?
Hey, I was told to come here. I need to get my taxes. My tax return.
Okay, just go ahead and tell him your name.
Yeah, it's Sam. Sam Miller. It's I'm supposed to get a lot of money back. I don't want the IRS to come after me.
But the thing about telling her that I love her, it's like, yeah, there's so much, like, culture. It's such a cultural moment. Like, you see it on movies, TV shows, and, like, I'm gonna overthink it. I'm not gonna be able to be in the moment.
No, you gotta get out of your head on this one, man.
Look, I talked to Ben last week, and he said my taxes would be.
We got it. Today. Mueller? Is it Mueller?
It was when the Germans immigrated. It's Miller now. It's Miller.
Yeah, I'm Ben. I don't know though. I mean, like,
what are you so afraid of?
I'm afraid of it being cheesy and not being real because it's so hard to be original in love these days. You know what
I'm saying?
Here
you go. Here you go, Mr. Miller. Sam Miller.
Yeah, there it's you are. Sam Miller.
I'm
Ben.
Niller. And
did you give me the right taxes? Sam Miller.
I handed you Mr. Niller's with an N.
Okay. My social security number is 222-55-4646.
Because here's what I'm saying. She says, this is what I've been waiting for. You know what I mean?
Like before I've said anything? Like when I just
that,
like,
that would be incredible.
Like she knows?
I need my taxes. Please. I want to get out of here. You guys can talk about whatever was going on.
Are you listening
on.
To our conversation?
Well, you're having it right in front of me.
Have you ever been in love?
Yeah. I mean, I've been in love.
Okay. We have an expert right here. It was Mr. What now? I'm sorry.
Stiller.
Stiller.
Miller.
Ben Stiller.
No, not you. I know your name. Why would I need to? This is Ben Stiller. This is Mr. Sam.
I'm going to jail.
Then maybe don't tell her you love her.
Is this
what it looks like?
This is what it looks like.
Ew.
Scene, we'll call that one. Okay, how was that?
Well, here's what I realize. For me, that's an enjoyable scene because I love talking about, I like that conversation. I enjoyed the conversation. And what I mean by that is kind of what I said earlier, guys, is that I never consider introducing a second thing. The second thing happens. So I'm invested in the first thing, right? When you start a scene, you don't think a satellite game might occur or even a tertiary. You're doing your thing. So I was really enjoying our conversation, Jamie. That was easier for me than just kind of like talking. I don't know. So that felt easier.
I think that was the most successful in terms of layers of game, because it seems like there was maybe two main games. Sam needs his taxes. You're coaching me on saying I love you. And then other games were you messing up Sam's name, giving him the wrong taxes.
Yes.
I had a sub game of keep saying I'm Ben, even though no one's asking.
Yeah, no, you're right. So that's four right there.
Right. So that would, to me, was the most successful layering of clear games. Interesting.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about this dynamic is you guys are kind of peas in a pod. And then I don't think I really had much of a game, and I was a little bit more straight to your absurd, which I think also kind of highlights, in a way, your peas in a pod game, which is kind of fun.
That's interesting. Gosh, there's so many, pardon me, variables when you start to break it down like this, because had we had another hour in this episode, would we go through all the different possibilities and go, actually, it works the best when you have peas in a pod with lower stakes than the person, you know what I mean? Like 70-30, you know, I wonder, that's interesting.
I do think it was important that I had high stakes and you guys kind of had, but you guys also had lower high stakes in your own world, right? The love thing, that's not low stakes.
You know, I said at the very beginning, I've never been like taught this. Nobody like teaches like, all right, today we're going to really focus on secondary games, you know? That's That's interesting. I've never like slowed it down like this. And as we're finding, it's easy to kind of stumble over it. I think because I don't think anybody enters a show or a scene with, all right, guys, tonight we're really going to focus on those second games, right? It's usually like focus on relationship or focusing on your listening or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But you never, the focus isn't like, because I feel like if you give focus to the secondary game, Sam, going into it, as even as an exercise, it's hard to not make that the entire thing.
Yeah.
Because I want to focus on my relationship, the things I like, and the friendship I had with Jamie as coworkers and friends and coaching. That's why this one felt a little easier for me.
Yeah. And my mind is still blown a little bit by what Jamie said before we jumped into the three person, which is that all pairs of duos could have byplay. So in that scene, you and Jamie had
Why don't we do one more? Why don't we do one more? We're going to do a three person scene where the different groupings, pairings, you know what I'm trying to say, also have our own little sub stuff. Okay? Yeah,
okay.
All right.
Hey, Sam, will you hand me that nut? That nut?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, Sam, I'll take one too.
Okay, here you go.
Thank you.
It's doing a great job with this car.
I hope. I hope it's like... could blow up.
You know what blew up is that Marvel movie this past weekend, Shang-Chi, I think that's how it's called. It's like a Kung Fu Marvel thing. It's like huge, $90 million.
Okay, we got to pause real quick. Sorry, time out. Here's the way I'm seeing this right now, Sam. I don't know if Jamie was trying to initiate his own thing with you, but I hijacked that to make that our three thing, okay? Just hear me out for real quick. Meaning, we're all now working on a car together as a trio. Then, okay. I thought information was going to be introduced to one of us from you. Hear me out. So that you would begin to establish what it is. Say, for instance, this Marvel thing, had Jamie jumped on that? Oh, I totally thought it was going to do better at the box office. Then in my head, I'd be like, great. Three people working on a car. Jamie and Sam have this Marvel connection. Now I'm going to introduce, how's your mom? To you, Sam, right? She's still sick. So now you have Marvel with Jamie, sick mom with me, and then Jamie and I still have a thing to do. But what happened here, and we're all working on a car, but what happened here is when you said Marvel and nobody jumped on it, it felt like we're another layer of three people working on a car. Sam has his own thing, his own interest in Marvel.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I was just trying not to talk about the thing we were doing in the scene.
Well, that's the thing too. I mean, Sam, you want your mind to be blown. It's like, fine, each duo has their own game, but you and I talk about all the time that you have your own game and I have my own game in the scene too. So we each individually have our own game. Well, we have our own game as duos, and then we also have byplay.
Chris also complicated this because what I wasn't thinking about is all three of us would also have a game, right? Like, Chris, the car thing could be you and Jamie, but no, all three of us have one thing. Chris and I have one thing. Chris and Jamie have one thing. I and Jamie have one thing. So now we're up to four. Then Jamie has his thing. Sam has his thing. And Chris is his thing. So a three-person scene.
That's just the foundation.
We have fixed it. We've fixed the three-person scene to have seven games.
That's okay. Just the foundation. We haven't even introduced byplay yet.
Okay. So I want to try one more time.
Yeah.
But just so that I don't feel insane, do you understand my math by also asking for the nut makes us that's our shared thing as a unit? Did you understand that?
So let's say I didn't. I thought you were just jumping on Jamie's thing.
No, because to me, like, because then I don't know. Just for my brain, it feels easier if we establish that we are in a thing, and then that's a little like
let's all start with all three of us doing the same thing.
That's just because, and I know sure. That's not we might not do that in the show, but just for on our way out here.
Right. Make sure to roll out the puff pastry a little thinner. It's gonna rise better. You want the butter to hit the heat. Great.
Oh my gosh. I just want to say I love working for you. I love being here. This is the quality when I was in culinary school. This is the quality of food I imagine. So thank you, chef.
Thank you, chef. No problem. I like to hire ex-cons. I believe in helping out. Yeah, you gotta. Otherwise, they just do crime again, you know. And I'm not having any fucking people doing crime in my bakery. So everyone's on the straight and narrow here.
Yes, chef.
Absolutely, yes, chef.
Yes, chef.
Sam, that's a very nice hairdo. I really like that. You go to somebody for that?
Yeah, my old cellmate. He started styling it when we were inside, and once he got out, he opened up a stylist shop.
Wow, God. God, that looks good. You look like you're ready for prom.
Well, thank you. Lenny's on 24th.
Hey, chef, you ever get allergies?
Yeah, I'm allergic to cats. It's kind of weird. I developed that allergy like in midlife. I had a cat my whole life, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom, had to get rid of her.
So that's the thing, right? You can develop when you're older, right?
Totally. Totally. Okay. I mean, she had leukemia, so I think it made her dander extra stinky or something like that, and that's when I had to I mean, insult to injury. Talk about that. A cat has leukemia. That's when you want to be there for her the most. And I had to get rid of her.
Oh.
She now lives with my mom. I can't even visit.
Hey, can you hand me the butter?
There you are.
Did you hear about Slim Mickey? Got nabbed.
Course I heard. But yeah. I don't want to bring that in here.
Okay,
all right. Listen, you see, Chef respects me. I feel like I have an actual thing going on with him. I don't need to bring that life is done.
Yeah, I know. You just grew up with Slim. I just wanted to make sure.
But now I'm here, you know?
Yeah, we're both here.
Sam, do you think your guy could, do something about this bald spot? I have bald spot on the left side of my head where I got hit as a kid.
So Lenny makes wigs. That's why he's so good at hairstyling. He makes his own wigs.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I don't need a full wig. I just need, a patch of hair or, a comb over or something to cover that. See the spot above the ear?
I wasn't going to say anything. I actually think it looks dignified. You know, it's like a dignified bald spot.
Oh, hello? Yeah. Hey, Ma, I can't talk. I'm at work. What do you mean?
Okay, so we'll put these in for an hour, and I'll check on them.
Yeah,
I'll be there soon. Fuck. Chef, can I get something over the counter, or does it have to be through a doctor?
What kind of allergy is it?
I don't know. It's in my nose, and my eyes are watering.
That just sounds like an allergy. But what are you allergic to? Pollen, cats, dogs?
I don't know. I haven't been around pollen, a cat or a dog. Isn't there is there a general allergy thing?
No, it's usually pollen. Usually pollen is considered the general allergy. I mean, I would go get an allergy test. Go see an allergen. I've got a great allergen I can recommend.
Sam, shall we? Chef, what do you think?
Wow, those dresses look great, gentlemen.
Scene. I found that enjoyable. You know, I don't know how entertaining or funny or whatever, but it was fun to kind of play with the nice bink. We're establishing this. I'll tell you what, I've never played with that in mind before. So having that in my mind, I enjoyed the flowage of it. And I think if we rehearsed that way, we would start to be able to turn up the heat on some of these things. Some things would be more important, less important, heightened, less heightened. And that could be a really fun dynamic. But just for like just trying it out, just jumping in, I really enjoy that. Sam, what were your thoughts on there? Oh, sorry. Please.
No, I was going to say that's really interesting that with all those games and sub-games and byplay and all that stuff, that there might be a hierarchy or there might be an order of operations. Then you can start developing like a rhythm, like Sam was saying, with the musicality of it. It's not just a random interjection of games. It's like, oh, we hit cons, then we hit bald spot, then allergies, then mom, then dresses, then wigs, then bald spot, then wigs, then bald spot, then wigs, then dresses, then cons, then blah, you know, and that could be really interesting. That could be really interesting, super complicated, but really interesting.
Yeah, we've talked about spinning the plates in the scene, definitely kind of felt them spinning a little bit, but I loved how balanced it was and that nothing seemed to overtake the whole scene. But sort of to what you guys were talking about earlier, it felt like a full world, you know, for as short as that scene was and, you know, for a little bit of comedy that maybe we got in there. It certainly felt developed in a nice way, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
You know what else? For there being so many things going on and three of us, I felt like I had the time to start to ask myself questions as the character. What's important to me? How do I feel about you guys, how do I feel about myself legitimately? Because Jamie, when you painted me as an ex-con, that was a gorgeous endowment that now I got to wear for the rest of the, even asking the question about allergy and over the counter and stuff. I begin to, those are questions that are coming from like, well, I haven't been on the outside a lot. And even as small as that is, I don't ever need to justify that. But those questions are coming through that filter, which is fun considering there's so many other things going on. I still had time to think about myself.
Well, and you got to do a beautiful thing too, which is if our thing is we're ex-cons, but our threesome thing is this bakery where the boss doesn't want crime to come in there. Like now you get to play a conflicted character, which I think is such a rich place to be. So that was really kind of cool to see it come together.
That was my phone call with my mom. She was giving me news of something that might jeopardize my job and my freedom, frankly, which could have been established had like the scene continue. You know,
yeah. When you said "shall we," I thought you were going to say "let's go." Like someone had gotten in trouble and we had to go help them out or something. So it was interesting that you prioritized the job as opposed to the news you got.
But also, how great would that moment be on stage, Sam? I say "shall we," and you put on your brass knuckles. You know what I mean? And I'm like, "Hold on," or you pull out your gun. Also, the audience, our listeners, pardon me, can't see, but I was rolling dough the entire time. I have my paper in front of me where I take notes. It felt nice, and I think that would be nice to establish on stage too, a little bit of action to kind of fill out the world and kind of see that I'm focused on the flour and this dough. Do you know what I'm saying? Rather than, like, it's kind of nice to have that action.
I thought about that. We are particularly challenged just doing this verbally because in a normal on stage scene, I can trip over the rug every time I walk by a certain thing. I can move a chair without saying anything. So the possibility of games and byplay is so much more infinite in person, or at least visually, than just verbally.
We're going to wrap this up. I just want to highlight the idea that physical byplay might be something that we didn't tap into, but is really where it's at.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. Sam, thank you for bringing this topic to us, because I will say I've spent the last, you know, year and a half really just locked into like my emotional play, which I love. But I really found this satisfying. You know, I do love the science of scene work as well. And I just haven't spent a lot of time there lately, which is fine. It felt nice to kind of play mathematically. But not that there wasn't stakes and emotion involved. It was just it was a fun brain game. Like I enjoy that. And you know, I can imagine one of us coaching a team in this form, you know, this kind of It was really fun. I'm glad you brought that.
I love byplay as a form.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really. God, so much fun. Well, everybody, thanks for going along this experiment with us. You know, even when we crash and burn, it's still beneficial. If you have thoughts on any of this, please reach out to us at The Comedy Fix on Instagram. We really enjoy hearing from you guys. Gosh, yeah, that feels good. That feels good. I don't know, anything else on the way out here, gentlemen?
I love it. 3-person scenes. Let's do it.